Thanks for listening to the Military to Civilian Career Transition Power Hour. 1 hour of tips from experts and real stories from people just like you. For those thinking about what lies ahead, for those going through the job search, and those who have paved the way to their next career after the military. These professionals are dedicated to helping you move forward successfully to the next phase of your career after the military. Welcome to Exchange.
Start our power hour with somebody who is in the soup. That means going through the transition, active duty to civilian. So as they make this career transition, they're going through so many feelings. And that's why I call it flying by instruments, aka the soup. My special guest today is Hamad Mathis, U.S. Army. Welcome, Hamad. Thanks so much for saying yes to telling us your story.
Heshel, thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here to share.
You told me that you've accepted an offer. Do you want to talk a little bit about that process?
Yes, ma'am. It was a very taxing process, but with proper preparation, support from my support group, mentors, and just continuing to keep my feet moving forward, I was able to successfully transition into a cybersecurity consultant role with Unveil Security Group.
Congratulations on the cybersecurity position. So tell me the process that you went through. How many interviews? How many rejection letters? What was it? Did you do SkillBridge? Give us some insight.
So I did. So this all starts, I think TAP recommends 18 months out. So we started about 18 months out. I did end up doing a SkillBridge and it was a phenomenal company. I ended up getting an opportunity there as well. Unfortunately, because of layoffs and things of that nature, things kind of, fell through. But I stay flexible. I stay liquid. It's one of the sayings that I get from, what's that show called? SWAT. Honda, the character Hondo, he always tells them before they go on an assignment, stay liquid. And so I made sure to stay liquid, stay very flexible. And I was able to come back to the drawing board and kind of refocus, so to say, my sights or my crosshairs on my next target and execute. So overall, front to back with interviewing, sometimes with DoD contractors and, certain positions that require a more in-depth background check or clearance and things of that nature. Those can start as far out as I've heard 4 to 6 months for some of those roles. Most everyone else today, at least 2023, 2024 that I interacted with, they only wanted like immediate hires. So anywhere within the 30 to 45 day range. So I would go from applying to usually if they were moving forward in the process, you'd hear something back probably within a week or two, and then 2 to 3 rounds of interviews within 2 to 3 weeks after that. Mm-hmm. And that usually would be followed by an offer.
How many offers did you get?
Quite a few. So initially when I was on SkillBridge, I've gotten several opportunities. I would say at least over a dozen.
Wait, stop. You got several offers or several conversations?
Several would have been offers had I accepted, put it that way. And so there were conversations at first, and then it was like, hey, we love you in our team. Because of things related to my family, one of my priorities was to be able to work remote. My wife's here, Navy medical officer, completing her residency program in Houston, Texas. So I wanted to be able to, spend time with my family and be close there. So working in a skiff, right, in Hawaii or other locations probably wasn't the best option.
Right.
So that was a strong determinant factor. My ability to accept any of these offers, right? Or even to offers or interest, official offer letters, though, I ended up getting, I think I got it down to, it was like four or five.
That's a lot. Good job. I think you're going to get some phone calls, just so you know. People are going to be reaching out to you on LinkedIn. Like, we're going to have to spell your name and give them a direction so they can reach out to you. That doesn't sound normal to me. I mean, that's great. That's awesome. That's a lot. And I think that if you are planning well, which it sounds like you did, I wrote a book, Civilian Mission, a 3-year guide for military professionals planning civilian careers. So you can really be available for those conversations. I'm also finding this, Hamad. A lot of people say, well, I had an offer, but they really didn't get an offer. They had a conversation that sounded like the company wanted to give them an offer. That's why I asked, how many offer letters did you have the opportunity to look at? When did you get to like the salary talk? When did you go back to the family and say, there's an offer on the table. We need to talk about this. How many times was it? Still 4?
4 to 5. I do things a little opposite than what's advertised or what's common. So I look intrinsically first, right? Because we all have value and things that we can bring to the table. And so I have a former background in sales too. So I'm familiar with a pitch or two, right? And so doing that, negotiating the salary, I negotiated my salary, you know, even in front of my family before, I was able to kind of drive a sense of urgency because it was like, hey, this is when I need something by, right? But I want something by this date, right? This is my preferred date. And so it's like, hey, you know, to be respectful to all other opportunities, right, that I'm pursuing, you know, organizations, I'm going to need to hear something back within this 2-week window.
Good job.
And for some, that doesn't work. Right. For some, you know, it's, hey, you know, you're looking for an opportunity. I'm like, yeah, but it's a two way street. Right. We have to give and take and ebb and flow and work together. And ultimately, I made a decision where I was most wanted, loved and appreciated. And where my value was shown in song.
I have a feeling you're going to be teaching negotiation classes with me at some point. That's outstanding. And I'm glad that you're saying this out loud. What I find as I teach workshops on negotiation, on salary negotiation specifically, is understanding your worth. That's why my book is called Unlocking Your Worth. It really is owning your value. But in order to own your value, it's everything. It's your spouse's priorities. It's your family's priorities. It's the location you need to be or the locations you're willing to look at. The cost of living in those. You know, you got to do some research. You got to talk it out. It sounds like now that you've moved to military spouse, you kind of went from active duty to military spouse. Am I right on that?
Yes, ma'am.
You're still in the thick of it, right? The mission still continues for your family.
I think it also gives us an advantage, being that I've kind of like walked and blazed that trail, you know, that my wife will soon, you know, get the blaze for herself. There were times where I needed pick me ups, right? And I needed to call a friend and go fishing and to take my mind off of the process, for sure. But I just think today, and I don't want to sound like cliche, like I know all the answers, right? Because this worked for me. It may not work for everyone, but one of the best things you can do is like when I'm programming and I get stuck, right? Or a writer gets writer's block, right? It's to like totally disconnect, take a step back, reflect on who you are, right? Your intrinsic values, what matters to you the most. And then once you develop those, what I call deal breakers, mm-hmm. it's like, hey, does it meet my deal breakers? Yes or no? And then once you get 4 or 5 opportunities that meet those deal breakers, then you have to go down. I created a little matrix, right? Where we look at total compensation package, for example, where we're looking at PTO days, right? Sick leave, things. Well, you can get a little bit more finicky and specific, but I think applying abroad and a wide net is great. But I think what that means in reality is a lot different from most people think, because applying to hundreds and maybe even thousands of jobs, it's just not realistic, especially today with applicant tracking systems and the need to customize resumes to even get through, you know, with the keywords and things of that nature. It's more of a quality over quantity. And I'm still a firm believer that people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And that can only start with a conversation. So those are all about relationships. And, you know, that keyword that everyone, you know, snaps on and tap. My mom and I have this thing. We love to talk. We love conversation. And so I've never met a stranger in my life, right? And right. And so for me, it was every avenue. And then it's why I don't burn bridges, right? You know, because people remember your work ethic. People remember how you made them feel, right? People remember how you embraced the suck. Because of those relationships, I was able to have a lot of opportunities that I would not even have been able to find on my own. Simply because word of mouth and reputation goes a whole lot further than bullet points on a resume.
You said you had a sales civilian career before the Army. And how long did you serve in the Army? And what was your MOS?
So I'll start from the beginning. So before the Army, I actually played Division I football at Coastal Carolina University.
Nice.
So go Shawna Clears.
Okay.
And I played under my head coach. He's kind of well-known guy. His name is Joe Moglia. After that, I was able to actually one of my college jobs. I was a part-time worker at Best Buy, so I was a computer sales associate there, and that's how I got my start in retail and just sales in general. Other than the great discount, right, and being able to, you know, test out all the new toys. One of the perks of working there was that I got to get out of the stereotype for computer science and tech majors, and that is not being social, right?
Right.
So I had to be social. That was, you know, the name of the game. Customer service and hospitality were the keywords, and especially in Myrtle Beach, right. Very popular tourist destination. And I went on from there to be a beer salesman. And then from there, I was a frontline sales associate selling what most people know as timeshare, but what we call vacation ownership.
Got it.
The thing no one wants to buy. No one comes in our office to purchase anything, but ends up spending thousands of dollars.
So you're a salesperson, and that's not typical for a lot of cybersecurity folks, just in my experience, you're unusual. You have a lot of skills that people are struggling to learn. So I'm going to have you put your mentor hat on. What would you say? I mean, this stuff comes to you naturally. You said there's never a stranger. You've never met a stranger. I can talk to a fence post. So I feel you. You and I live in the same outgoing world. But for somebody who's not, what would you recommend they do?
It takes me back to my public speaking classes or when I was part of a thespian group in high school. And that is imagining, you know, I know this might sound silly, but first of all, a stress ball is great, right? Breathing techniques also, you know, those help us. And then also, I forget, there's a movie where they actually do this, but imagining everyone in their underwear. Right?
True. Okay. Yes.
And so it just ultimately, I think it boils down to confidence, right? Because that's usually what it is, a lack of confidence. Mm-hmm. And so we have to understand that every driver's license number, every dog tag, right, is not just an entity, a thing, but it's a human being. It's a person, right? It's a family. It's a sister. It's a brother. It's a husband, a wife. And so putting love first and loving those people as if they were your family, like if you treat everyone as a family member, I just feel like you'll never go wrong.
Get back to your MOS. What was it?
Now, I was fortunate to be able to do what I love while also serving my country. And I was a 17 Charlie, or a cyber operations specialist in the U.S. Army.
Okay. So you're continuing the mission for sure.
Yes. Continue to serve others, which is one of my core values. And I'm continuing to use my cyber and technical expertise to help others.
Okay. And you're using your clearance, I'm imagining, going back in. Now, how do you do that if you're remote?
So remote doesn't always mean remote. Right. Because some clients may want you there in person. So I do have that flexibility also. You know, it just depends on, you know, who I'm assigned to.
So that they would call that hybrid, by the way. So you needed to stay hybrid. And you have a very specific location because your spouse is sort of anchored into finishing a program. And I would imagine if you have other family members, they're in school, right? How many PCSs did you have during your active duty days?
So active duty, 1, 2, I would say 3, no more, 2 to 3.
You talked a little bit earlier about community groups. I hear this a lot. I'm not certain that I'm going to have the same level of camaraderie or community when I go into the civilian workforce. You've worked in the civilian workforce, and now you've experienced the Army over 6 years. What are you looking for in the civilian world that you didn't have when you started, but you got in the Army? What is it?
I would say leadership, mentorship, and leadership, because too many times in the civilian world before my Army career, you're doing what you do and you're being great at it, but you don't know where you're going, right? Your 3 to 5 just looks like more money, right? Or more vacations, right? But career-wise, really get foggy, especially because nowadays, you know, most people aren't even staying. Well, 3 things, accountability, not just for myself, but for everyone, leadership and mentorship.
Let's go back to the thought of community. And when I heard you say that, I thought your community, how you're supported in your work. Somebody said to me, and I've said this several times on the podcast, a woman mentioned to me that either she read or that she felt if she were to skate across Lake Michigan and it was thaw time and she fell through the ice, if on one side of the lake, her colleagues from work were standing there and on the other side of the lake, her colleagues from the military were standing there, she knew who would show up. Who would that be?
You know, that's a tough call. I have some phenomenal service members and battle buddies that I've served with. I also have some phenomenal teammates and family members that are part of my support circle also. So I'm fortunate, I'm blessed to have a blended support system where it's not just military, you know, where I have a spouse, right? Military spouse, dual spouse, and I come from a military family. So,
good. Okay.
Yes, I would say more of the military-ish, but I don't want to discredit the love and the support that I also get from my teammates, my gridiron brothers. Also.
Right on. Well, I love your optimism. And you are certainly in the beginning of it. So we're going to be checking back with you as you grow in your career and as these podcasts on my exchangepodcast.com, the Military to Civilian Career Transition Power Hour is this one, but I have plans to create others. So there might be some opportunity for you to move forward with us in another segment. Tell us what the future holds for you, and then we'll wrap it up with just some last advice. But where do you see yourself in a couple of years?
That is a great question. That is a question I struggle with day to day because, like I said, I'm kind of in the soup, still figuring it out. Ultimately, though, I would say my next 3 to 5, these aren't really career goals, more so personal, but the exploration of parenthood, fatherhood, being more present as a spouse, right? Being a husband, also sharpening and perfecting my craft so that I am able to mentor and give back. I'm not saying what I do now isn't meaningful, but in a more meaningful and direct way, especially to those that are looking to transition into cybersecurity upon leaving the military. And of course, you know, career side, achieving and becoming all that I can be, right? Continuing that warrior ethos from the Army. So
I like it. I like your style. I want your last alibi, and then we'll tell people how they can get in touch with you if you want to do some mentorship.
I'm starting at this. I'm super new, right? But feel free to reach out to me via LinkedIn. I'm not hard to find. I think it's Hamid/Mathis.
And how do you spell that?
So my name is Hamid and then Mathis. So Mathis.
Are you going to keep using LinkedIn now that you got a job?
Yes. Okay. I think LinkedIn's more, and you actually find that you'll get a whole lot more out of LinkedIn if you don't restrict yourself to using it only when you're in dire need of a position. Because once again,
perfect.
It's about networking.
You know what? Thank you for bringing that up. So I'm looking for people for my segments. I have a ton of people that have been out 5 years, a ton of people have been out 1 to 4, but I really struggle finding folks who are in the soup, right? So I have to go hunting for you. So being a recruiter, I use LinkedIn every single day. It's my tool, man. It's on my tool belt for sure. So if I put in transitioning military to go find these folks, you know what I see over and over, Hamid? No posts, hasn't been active. So what they did, a lot of folks, don't be this person. You get your free LinkedIn, you put, because your TAPS class facilitator said, put that you're transitioning military so recruiters find you, and they never use it again. They set it up. They have 35 people. So for us seasoned veterans who are looking for people, I know that they're not going to answer. They're not checking it. They're not participating in it. So, you know, if someone's not active, and just FYI, for those of you who are looking for mentors or someone who's at a company, maybe they did a SkillBridge program, and if they haven't posted in the last 3 to 4 months, don't bother sending them an in-mail. Don't bother. They're not checking it. But it's frustrating to see how many people start something and don't finish it. And it is such a great tool, right? To your point, networking never stops, not after you get
the job.
And
that's the thing about LinkedIn. It's truly unique because it's not necessarily, I know some people may classify it as social media. I think it kind of blurs the line of social media, but I see it more as a digital storefront, you know, and everything in life is a sale. Right. You know, whether anyone wants to admit it or not, you know, even with your spouse, there was some negotiation done. There was some paperwork signed. Right. There was a deal that was committed to. Right. A commitment made. And so what better opportunity than a free or not uberly expensive, you know, digital storefront that's catered to professionals, not only seeking new opportunities, but seeking connections and mentorship.
Yeah.
So I take my hat off to LinkedIn for that.
Yeah. And you get premium for a year, right?
Yes. And yeah, all veterans, transition service members, I encourage you to start it about 6 months out from your transition date. So you can actually keep it for 6 months post-transition as well.
What would you like to close your segment with? It could be advice. It could be reading the tea leaves. What do you want?
So I would like to say, be encouraged, right? Resiliency, a big word in the Army, right? stay resilient, stay liquid like water. And for me, it just takes me back to my younger grade school days. I used to play running back before switching to defensive back. And the number one rule of being a running back is that you fall forward and keep your feet turning. So as you're transitioning, remember to fall forward, keep your feet turning. Just like the game of football, this transition is more of a game of inches than it is yards. You really don't understand or know how close you are to breaking through that veil and getting that opportunity or making that connection that's going to change your life or change someone else's life.
You're an inspiration, friend. I look forward to being a guest on your podcast. He doesn't have a plan to make one, but he does now.
Yeah.
Your positivity is really infectious. Thank you so much for sharing it. All right. Well, we're going to say goodbye to Hamid, and I'm Cheryl Cross. I'm honored to sit at this table to offer the stories of 100 transitioning military folks as they leave the military, as they circumnavigate the civilian workforce. We'll be right back on the next segment after this brief break with an expert. So stay tuned. As we roll into our second segment of the hour, we feature an expert. She's known as the Stressalist. I'd like to introduce you to Tricia Houghton. Hi, Tricia. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, Cheryl. Thank you for having me, and you're too kind.
You've been on the podcast circuit for a long time, and I've seen a couple of your episodes. I know that you're constantly doing something for the veteran community. You're trying to fix a lot, not fix, but aid. We don't fix anything.
Yeah.
We just build bridges.
We help, yeah.
Yeah, and you have something called Vetted that I wanted you to talk about. You're in the process of really putting the fine tunes on that. So why don't you talk to us about what Vetted is?
I'd be happy to. So, you know, Vetted, I joke because the transition space was never in the plan for me. As I was sharing services, I started on LinkedIn about a little over a year ago, and I started getting invited to the transition networking events as a supporter and provider, you know, because I didn't serve, and I always try to get as much firsthand knowledge as possible. And obviously, I can't go get combat or, you know, those type of military firsthand experiences. I thought, well, let me see what this is like and do my best in my ability to walk in their shoes, even if just for a minute, to see what this transition's like. So I went to the first event and it was 6 hours long. I want to preface by saying I am not bad mouthing any organization or anything out there. It was a phenomenal event. It was just highlighting to me how overwhelming that the transition space was. And I joke, but it's not a joke, that after 6 hours, I barely knew my name, much less yours. And I met between 300 to 400 phenomenal people, recruiters, supporters, etc. But like, it's just too much. It's a lot at one time. And so I thought, you know what? I need to dig into this a bit. So sure enough, more invitations came. I'm like, okay, let's go try something else, right? Let's see if this one's a little less of a lot. Long story short, it was not. And In fact, it was all career focused, which was kind of interesting to me. Here's how to do a resume. Here's how to interview, right? And also gear you towards either project management or IT. Sore spot for me. But that's about the only two careers that I hear. But I was like, okay, so are they all like this, right? So I continued, right? You get the idea. And found that they are all just about the same with a slight tweak. And usually the tweak is they're contradicting one another. And so what's supposed to be, right, this really helpful either networking event or recruiting event or here's how to build your resume event and how to interview becomes this weird, overwhelming few hours of contradictory information than other events. And I thought, this is damn confusing. And I'm a civilian, right? Like it had me questioning, do I know how to do a resume? Is my way even right? I went back to everything was about career. I thought, well, these veterans are anywhere from serving 4 years to 35 plus or minus. And so where's just the spot for finding you and who you are and outside of this uniform? Like, very cool, right? Like, career stuff certainly needed, certainly good that these things are here. However, where's just the, hey, this is a lot. And this is a pivotal moment. And you probably don't know things like what to wear or even what you want to do. I saw and noticed a few things, which was that everybody either went to the project management or IT route. And so when I started my group, which is called Vetted, essentially out of the need because I couldn't find just a space for support. And so I said, well, okay, I can't ignore like this big gaping hole here when I know I love group facilitation. I've done it for over 17 years and very passionate about it. So I said, okay, I'm just going to open the door and say, the people I'd been chatting with, just invite them and say, you come, you tell me what you want and what you need. Because I'd gone over, well, do I create a group about this or do I create a group about that? But I thought, no, I want to actually hear and let people know and our service members know that they can actually bring what they need and somebody will listen. And so they all came and they said, now here's what we need. And this is confusing and just a space to chat that isn't filled with recruiters and isn't filled with, you know, do this, this, and this, right?
Yeah.
And so this is a year later and we meet every other Tuesday. And up until this point, our practice has been, you know, the transitioning service members that kind of started with me have become kind of like the OGs now come back. You know, they're 8-9 months in their civilian career and they come back every other week. They take in the questions of, you know, new people, transitioning service members who have come into Vetted. And so it's all peer to peer. There's no kind of overwhelming goal there. It's just all support. And so people are able to ask service members, see for themselves, here's a direct question I have and an answer from someone that just went through it. And then the others chime in and say, yeah, I can say that was the same for me, or no, actually I had something different. And then we talk, you know, about where everybody is and how you're taking care of yourself.
So you're kind of just moderating this group of people talking to one another, and you've built a community. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, I have. We're about to do open and after the uniform option, because now it's really great that my original guys come back. I don't want them to not have a group either. Even though they're only 8, 9, some are only a few months out now, they're still transitioning. Yes. It's not something you just get the form right and you get the final thing. You're like, okay, well, I'm transitioned now. I guess I got my civilian job and my DD-214 and I'm good to go. That's not how that goes, right? We're going to be sharing materials on after the uniform group so that they can continue to receive support as civilians or as whatever they want, individuals. It's a long process.
It's a forever process. I've been told that you never stop transitioning. If you've spent a certain amount of time learning through the military as your first or second career, if you've been acculturated, some people call it institutionalized. So in order to unlearn that or to relearn a new program, a new corporate protocol, as we're talking about careers here, it's a whole other learning curve. You know, and I'm hopeful that the folks that are listening, that are tuning into you and checking out Vetted and all the programs you're going to be creating, but they're also finding people who are like them. So I think this is an important point, Tricia, and you're a community builder. I can tell. You're somebody who loves to connect, and I do too, which is why I created this forum for stories. It's not about Cheryl Cross telling everybody what to do.
Not me either.
And it's not about Tricia. It's about holding space for people who have stories and for experiences. So thank you for doing that. Before we hit the record button, you said that you're really focusing on suicide prevention. Can you talk more about that?
You know, I have a few programs out that focus on nervous system dysregulation. And I have the HAC program, which is my full body nervous system reset, taking in every area, including relationships. And forever is meant to be the forever change in way that you approach stress, because stress isn't going anywhere. But we can reprogram, we can reset the body and how it interprets that stress and the response it gives. And so that's that HAC program. I also have a regulating program, because that's the training program. I realized the biggest thing is people don't even know that nervous system dysregulation exists. And so I created the training program that's 2 days, half days, goes through what it is, why this is pivotal to issues like suicide prevention and retention even, and military readiness and even national security. It goes pretty deep. And then last but not least, I was approached over a year ago and said, hey, the White House and the VA are kind of revamping their suicide prevention program. I know you kind of do a lot of this work. Would you want to kind of work with it? And I thought, well, this was also never in the plan, but always in the plan in a way, right?
Right.
So I thought, well, gosh, I can't say no. So I said, yeah. That project did not end up working out. However, a couple months later, it's, hey, we've got a new couple options here, and do you want to continue to work on it? And I said, absolutely. It's called Safest R. And Safest R is an inventory that we give our veteran, or will give veterans and or just community of mental health, that assesses your stress, anxiety, functionality, your environment, substance abuse, and trauma. And then the R stands for resilience. Mm-hmm. So it assesses all those factors that we know influence, right, you getting to that red line of beyond return. And so when we know, right, what the score is, and then we know what the resilience score is, that gives us an idea of where we can offer you support. So if you're between, say, 40 to 60, right, you would qualify for certain automatic ways to increase your resilience. And so the idea is, for me, one of the many tests you would get would be a Safest R, which gives you your baseline of where you start before any military trauma. And everybody has military trauma, no matter what job you did.
Right.
And then we would know, hey, before any of this, you're at this number and this much resilience. So how can we strengthen, support you, and whatever? And then the other option is, before people, 30 days from the time they are fully entering their transition, the end of their career, they take SafestR and it shares what services they would most benefit from, suggestions, if you will. And then, so by the time, right, the day hits, they're not waiting 6, 8 months, years for the support that they need. They're already walking into it. And as a friend of mine likes to say, it's like a hub, right? Like, we've got you, here's what you can have. And then we just added an AI component, a guy connected with, his name is Brandon, and he's just started Lifeline Vet, and we overlapped. And so we now have a secondary product called SafestR Lifeline.
I like
that. And basically, it's the same thing, right? However, the Lifeline part gets added in, which is an AI journal tool. And essentially, you can talk to it just like I'm talking to you, or you can type. It's going to monitor how well our service recommendations are doing for you. It's the way to track it, right? If you've been in, let's say, we say, hey, you'd be great for some groups. Here's a variety. Pick what you think would best suit you. Then through their journaling or telling, we would be able to track, okay, this is getting better. This is getting worse. Something's going right. Something's going wrong. And really what it's meant to do is, if there's an active crisis, it scans for detection, can get that crisis response right away if need be. And if not, then we can say, at least from the SafestR end and the recommendations, okay, this is actually not being helpful. Let's try something else. The two together just honestly fit like a glove. The team that created Lifeline portion, full military background, is brilliant in his ability to make all those things secure, because that's, of course, everybody's concern.
That was going to be my question too. I mean, how does this not turn on you?
So for instance, the 30 days out, you're still active duty, but number one, you're at the end of your career no matter what. Now, I say this not because we anticipate it getting leaked, but it's through all third parties. Like, for instance, I am not employed by government agency. The people that are with me are also not. And so no one's going to have that access. And so it doesn't ever get to any type of colonel or head that can say, wow, so-and-so's showing me massive depression and look how unwell they are. That is so not the goal. And I can tell you that's something I stress over every day, because I want it to make sure it doesn't ever come back to haunt you. The good news is, if you're 30 days out, right, you are, if let's say, God forbid, something did get leaked about your mental health, well, you're at the end, and so it shouldn't ever be coming back to kind of bite you, so to speak.
It sounds like a tool that individuals will be using. My question is always, is what if the government implements it for their soldiers?
So I can tell you, right, the reason why I love working with teams is because there's not one person, I don't know it all. I love to get the opinions of others, because if we can all have each other's back, which is my goal, right, we all have different areas of knowledge and we all see different things different ways. So, you know, we can only account for the what ifs so much, but I can honestly say that I flat out would not give it out if it's going to be weaponized against somebody. Just
right.
And the team that I'm with is fully in agreement that if that's the thing, then no.
I like that we're talking just even about nervous system regulation. I think that people who are self-diagnosing with ADHD, autism, this is very big in that community. And we've talked about it very briefly. I had an ADHD coach on, his name is Brett Green up in Seattle, and he works with executives specifically for ADHD. And he and I actually grew up together. We used to walk home from junior high school. Yes. So to bring him on my podcast 30 some odd years later is really neat. But for you, I just want to say thank you for all you're doing. It's really, when you're a civilian, you always feel like you're asking permission to serve this very unique group.
Yes.
And I come to it as a career specialist. You're coming to it as a mental health specialist. So thank you. We're all, as I say, we're all holding hands together and screaming from the rooftops, trying to connect dots. There's so many resources out there.
But
just like you said earlier, there's a lot of conflicting information. And I think because society believes that the military will just eat whatever they're served because they're so used to being told what to do. And here we all are like, no, we're empowering you to have your own voice. We want you to figure out what you want. Don't go to a recruiter and say, I don't know what I want. I don't know how much I want for salary. Here's a tool. Here's a book. Here's a class. Here's a 6-hour event, because we know that's the only day that you have. So you're going to drink by the fire hose. I mean, it's all well intended, but you know, you're coming into it from a civilian mindset and you're like, holy mackerel. They are used to training, by the way. I know you know this now, but I was the same way. I was exhausted after my first event. Like, how do people do this all the time? It's like, well, they really, you know, burn out or they move on.
Well, right. They get that dysregulated nervous system.
Yes.
So I'm like, oh my gosh.
Exactly.
No wonder.
I get every other Tuesday vetted. How would someone get in your group to become a part of it? Do they find you on LinkedIn? What's the process?
So two things. Search Trisha Houghton, or you can just search stressalist.com. I'll come. Everybody gets a one-on-one if they want with me. And however we can, you know, interact with support, plug you in, share services, share connections. I love that. Then we'll do it all. And hopefully we can then get on to the, hey, what do you really want piece, which is my favorite. Well, seeing people come back alive again in what they want to do and realizing they can is just like the coolest thing.
Yes. So you're right. When they have that aha moment, like, you see it a lot in the entrepreneurs. Right. You see it a lot in somebody like they've been building this idea. I had Michael Klemmer, who's Ariel Resupply Coffee.
Yep.
And he said, Cheryl, flash to bang. It was 15 days. You created a business in 15. He's like, yeah, dude, I'm a supply logistics guy. Like, I just had to figure out the coffee side to figure out this side and put it. He's so excited about it. I'm sure he works 24 hours a day. When
I
learned about you, I knew immediately that I wanted to have you on the podcast. And thank you for being so gracious and saying yes. I know your time is not just limited, but you're developing some really cool things. Please send anyone our way that wants to be interviewed and tell their story of transition, because like you, I believe that stories are transformational. I'm going to remember a story more than I'm going to remember a page in a book, even though I wrote a book. So, but go read my book.
Yeah, go read the book. I will.
Will
read the book. It's on my list, actually. So
thank you. And you're going to be back, I'm sure, as you develop more with Vetted and also through your stress list. And please check her out and see if you can join the every other Tuesday. If this is something you need, reach out to me or to her directly through LinkedIn. Any last alibis before we close up your segment?
Just really appreciative. And I love helping. And, you know, I'm, again, of that team mindset. And we all need help, like, no matter who you are, color, race, anything. We all need support. It's universal.
Well, I love my crisis counselors. Thank you so much for what you're doing in this space. We're going to close up our expert segment. This is Cheryl Cross. We're listening to the Military to Civilian Career Transition Power Hour. We're going to roll into another segment of somebody who's been out at least within a year, but no more than four, and hear their transition story. We'll be right back after this message.
Welcome to Exchange.
As we roll into our third segment for the Military to Civilian Career Transition Power Hour, we feature someone who's been out of the military one, but not more than 4 years. The reason I do this is I know that transition, even though it's a lifetime, it happens in stages, and everybody's going through certain things at certain stages. So I am honored and pleased to bring you someone that I've been stalking on LinkedIn for a long time. I listened to his radio broadcast. He is a former communications pro, a former IG, and an NCO in the Army. Please welcome Jose Velasquez. Hello, Jose. Hello. Thank you so much for joining me.
Cheryl, thank you so much for the opportunity to speak to you and to your audience.
I've been listening to you for so long. I'm a little fangirled out here, because when you listen to someone on the radio, it's like you feel you know them, which I remember from my radio days. But you were a communications pro in the Army. Talk to us about what you did and why you're doing it now.
Absolutely. Thanks again. I was a public affairs specialist, but really I started my career as a broadcaster. Public affairs was just the umbrella. And I joined the Army to be a broadcaster. It was the only job I'd take. And trust me, the recruiter tried to get me to be an infantry guy. But I wanted to be a broadcaster. And where I came from, that just wasn't possible. I came from the projects in a very humble place. And the opportunities to get into the kinds of professional fields that that broadcasting is was very difficult. I shouldn't say not possible, because it happened for me, but the opportunity to even go to college was very, very confusing. And so most of us had no idea how to get there. And maybe lack of knowledge was probably more than lack of opportunity, although those go hand in hand. But I joined the Army specifically because I heard that they had broadcasting and they paid while you were doing the job. I was okay with that. And so I showed up at a broadcaster's office and a recruiter's office. And I said, "Hey, I want to be a broadcaster." And he said, "I don't know if we have that." And I said, "Well, then I'm leaving." And so he checked his book. So he had a big book of fields and he found it. And he said, "Look at this. We do have this.
Who knew?
Okay, let's see what we can do about getting you in." And a few months later, I was in the Army and going through school and becoming a broadcaster. And I spent many years in the field. I broadcast in radio. Of course, that was my baby, and I loved broadcasting. And as a young soldier, I mean, talk about the gift of being able to play rock and roll and getting paid for it in uniform. It was the best. I was Mr. Good Morning Vietnam.
I was going to say,
yeah,
that must have been a big impetus for you, a good influence. When did that movie come out? Was that before you started or during?
I think it was during, but surely I had seen other movies that inspired me about broadcasting and of course, read some books and was a fan of many of the greats in radio before me. And so it was absolutely something that I had always wanted to do. As far back as I can remember, I was holding some sort of a microphone, even if it was a toothbrush. And so it was the one and only job I ever wanted to do. And then throughout my career, you know, as all things, you go into management if you stick around long enough. And in my case, I went into management and then the larger umbrella of public affairs. And I ended my broadcasting career, or I should say my public affairs career, at the Pentagon as what was called the regimental sergeant major for the enlisted force. And really, I guess in civilian terms, that was the director of operations for part of our workforce. And so there, I hope that I made an impact in helping the next generation of broadcasters behind me and public affairs specialists. And then at the very end of my career, I had a chance to become an inspector general and go help cut through the red tape and help young service members, military spouses, and government civilians with their problems. And I really enjoyed that.
I was talking with Jose earlier and said, you know, my small knowledge of IGs are that they're usually feared. And he's so friendly. And I said, "Were you friendly in your last MOS?" He says, "Of course I was. This is who I am." Mm-hmm. How rare is it that you can go into a recruiter's office and say, "This is what I want," and get it? Is that not common?
I don't think so. I think, and especially at that age, I think, you know, the average 18, 19-year-old may not know what they want. And so the recruiter will pretty much choose a field that, you know, that's available, or one or two, and give them an option. Mm-hmm. And so in my case, I was just so keyed in on this particular field, and there really wasn't turning me away. This was the only answer. And so in my case, he literally searched for it. Very few people would know it exists until they join.
I bet they still have that big book, though. <'Cause>, you know,
it's
the
all
Army.
Digital these days. I'm sure they got an iPad or something.
Yeah, exactly. But. Well, tell me something. Your transition story is what I'm hunting for. And I mm-hmm. want to know, you know, how you're continuing a lot of the work you're doing in different, not a uniform, in different clothes. But what do you mm-hmm. miss the most? Answer me that. What do you miss the most from your 30 plus years in the military?
I think I miss the people. I don't know that I miss waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning or getting a 4 o'clock in the morning call that somebody, you know, downtown got in a fight, one of my soldiers, and I had to run down there to go pick him up and find out what the heck he was doing. But I do miss the people, that soldier behind that story. I miss them and the unique experience that we had together. I've made some incredible friends beyond the uniform. And I really cherish those relationships as well. But there's a certain bond between us, unspoken bond that we have in uniform, and that is really hard to replicate anywhere else. Thankfully, many of the people who I had wonderful relationships with continue to have those relationships with me on this side of the uniform. And I am working with many of them to help them through that strange, amorphous time frame that happens between the moment you decide to leave the service and the moment you're on the other side thinking, "Oh my God, I just left the military. What am I going to do now?"
Did you ever want to go back?
I didn't. I assumed that they would call me. And so I still think I have my uniforms ready in the closet, thinking if war breaks out, they'll say, Jose, go shave and get back over here. We're waiting for you. I don't think that's going to happen, but it may be comfortable, you know, for a short time, expecting that would happen. And again, that just had to do with my love of what I did and the people that I did it with.
You're continuing the mission, though. I know this because I'm pre-gaming it for our listeners, but I know you're actually working with somebody that you served with. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So I am working with, you know, a series of people actually that I worked with who are in transition. I've got from the Certified Digital Networking Network, which is actually part of a fellow veteran who is kind of a LinkedIn superstar, Mike Quinn.
Yes.
And any service member who's in transition likely has seen his posts if they're on LinkedIn. He is, again, a big superstar, and he was kind enough to put his arm around me and teach me a thing or two in my transition. And I continue to work with him by conducting training on helping people figure out LinkedIn and some of the other digital networks, and just how to network in transition. You know, again, you have this built-in system when you're leaving the service, and it isn't always easy to figure out what to do when that network gets taken from you. Mm-hmm. And so so I help people in transition through that. In addition to that, I'm working with another group of veterans, and that is the Leader Transition Institute. And that's run by fellow veteran Annie Brock, who was one of the very first helicopter pilots in the 82nd Airborne. And she is a powerhouse. And, you know, she is just so invested in veterans and military transitioning people, mostly because when she got out, and she got out in the 80s, there just mm-hmm. wasn't a lot.
No.
And they just kind of gave you your papers and, hey, good luck. And that's about all she got. And so there was a lot of turmoil in her career in transition. And so it took her years. And as you noted, rightfully, transition is not an event, it's a process. And it does take a long time to hit those milestones and to figure certain things out. And thankfully, both of them have put their arms around me and an entire network of other veterans to help me through my transition. And while that was occurring, I went through experiences where I thought to myself, I don't know that I even knew to ask these questions, but there are things that get in your way, barriers and challenges. And as I was going through my transition, I found it, you know, to some degree therapeutic to begin to write on LinkedIn and share my experience going through the process. Somehow that became something that I fell in love with, but some of it was very practical. It was, hey, did you know that you got to fill out this form to get this one thing done? Nobody seems to tell you, but if this piece of information will help you and you're a few months behind me, I hope it does. And I started getting, you know, DMs from people, Jose, thank you so much. I had no idea either, but I went and filled out the form because you said so. And it's really, you know, made my life a little easier. And so I thought, man, this is something that people need, is someone to help guide them through that process. And at some point, of course, you stop knowing the step-by-step, but you know the overall theoretical and the issues that people are feeling, and those experiences that they're going through, those are eternal, they're evergreen. And I think every service member transitioning has likely felt some of that. And so now that I've been out long enough to not know the exact processes anymore, you know, what happens on Tuesdays and Thursdays down at the transition center, I can help people going through the process by knowing that at this point in their life, they're likely experiencing certain things and asking themselves certain questions. The service member and their spouse, because a lot of times people don't recognize that transition is a family event if you have a family.
That's so true. Thank you so much for bringing that up. We cannot mm-hmm. support our family dependents enough. Mil spouses, military spouses are finally getting the recognition they deserve. And as a recruiter and as an advocate, I'm very sensitive to that. But you're also mm-hmm. working with some folks that you served with. Am I right on that? Or are they working with people they served with? The radio station. Talk about that.
Yeah. So radio is my passion. It was my passion. And so I took this chance. And again, I'm happy to talk when the opportunity is correct about the Leader Transition Institute. But I went through one of their programs. And bottom line is, at the end of it, I felt the courage to go back to a part of my life that I loved. You know, as I noted, you know, as my career went on, it's a 30-year career. I got into management and higher level management and higher level management. And somehow I ended up at the Pentagon Puzzle Palace, trying to figure my way around inside that building and thinking, what am I doing here? But it was detached from my first love, where I started and what I loved doing when I first joined the Army, which was being a broadcaster day to day. And one of my former soldiers, which is really interesting, had become a government civilian. And for many years, he saved his money and, you know, made the terrific money moves with his money. And he also loved working in radio. As a matter of fact, we both worked as broadcasters. For any of our service member friends who've been overseas, they may remember the American Forces Network. We both worked in Korea at what was then called the American Forces Korea Network. Now they just switched some letters around. It's now the American Forces Network Korea. But he and I worked there together, and he decided to purchase a radio station. And he did so, and he digitized it and turned it into, you know, a modern day radio station. And as I was, you know, looking for work and looking for places to kind of hang my hat, I really wanted to get into that business. And he heard that I was interested in that as well. And he reached out and he said, Jose, what about getting back on the air? And I thought, what? Okay, John. It's my friend John Harlow, who runs Eagle Online Radio. And it's this terrific station that is syndicated in certain parts of the country, but streams around the world. And I could not believe it. I was so happy. And I immediately jumped on the opportunity. And I've been on radio since November 21st, 2020. And I don't know that I'm ever going to go off the air until he either kicks me off or, you know, a big radio station calls and says, Jose, we'll give you $500,000.
Don't hold your breath, boss.
But I won't be holding my breath, especially in radio. You know, radio and television are fun. You know, the prize, the money that you get, if you will, is the opportunity to do what you love. And so they know that. And so radio stations and television just doesn't pay a lot, but I don't care. I would do it for free. And John is a great boss, and so I surely am not complaining. I'm just talking smack a little bit, but radio is just one of those jobs.
Talk smack about John, 100%. Smack away.
He is the best, and I absolutely love working for and with him, and the fact that he gives me the opportunity to do my show how I want to and engage with my audience how I choose to, and so. It's awesome.
Let's talk about Leader Transition Institute, because this is very close to your heart. And I know you're not a representative, but you are like a graduate of there. So let's just say it was a fellowship for you. I had not heard about it much before you started talking to me about it. So please share that with them.
Yeah. So it's called the Leader Transition Institute, and it's a nonprofit run by my friend, Annie Brock, who I just shared a few minutes ago about our veteran. And Annie has a staff. And a group of directors, her board, is made up of all veteran and a few active duty who are in the late stages of their career getting ready to transition. But Annie has created, through many years of training and working in the human dimension with a variety of groups, to include the John Maxwell Group most recently, which is regarded as one of the best leadership training schools and teamwork training schools on the planet. John Maxwell has written, you know, over 30 books, and he's just well known as one of the great, great speakers and trainers of our time. So she is, you know, well recognized within that group. And she took some of what she learned there and created her own program in support of veterans in transition, or service members in transition. And it's called the Changing Focus, Moving from We to Me program. It's a 4-day workshop, And she does it on purpose Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, because that way, even if you got a stingy boss and they say, oh, I can't give you away for 4 days, you know, that can't. So you say, no, just two. You'll have to give up a weekend, but your boss only has to give away 2 days. But the workshop is really designed around helping you figure out who you are, which is a much more difficult question the longer you're in the service. You know, yes. If you're in for just one assignment, you keep your identity pretty much. And when you get out, you picked up the GI Bill and maybe some skills and you're on your way to the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. But after a 30-year career like I had, I really wasn't sure where the uniform stopped and Jose began. I don't know that I remembered Jose. You know, the last time I met him, I was 19 years old. And so I had to figure out who I was first and foremost. And then I had to figure out what I wanted to do. And that goes hand in hand with the third thing I learned from her through the Changing Focus program was, what's going to make me happy? And once I started figuring that out, I had the courage again to go back into the radio arena. Now, I don't want to make too much of myself, but I was a kind of this highfalutin Pentagon muckety muck walking around, you know, telling people what to do and directing this and that program. And that was all great. But I liked it, but I didn't love it. And I didn't want to get into high level public affairs. It's incredibly, incredibly stressful work, which is okay for people who love to do that. But I had worked, you know, 30 years. I really wanted to just kind of sit back, you know, wear a Hawaiian shirt since you're over there in that part of the world. Wear a Hawaiian shirt and play a little rock and roll like I did when I was 19 years old and have some fun doing it. My life is a lot less stressful these days, and I didn't want a job that was going to make it stressful again. And so I made the decision to get back into that. But I don't know that I would have had the courage to do that had I not gone through this little 4-day workshop. And so I really encourage people to participate in it because you really just don't know these things. And I'll tell you, you think you do. You're like, oh, I'm an individual thinker. I've been in the Army 30 years, but trust me, I know who I am. I don't need the uniform to tell me. No, the longer you're in the service, the more institutionalized you get, and the more difficult it is to be an individual thinker. And I don't mean that you can't think individually and that you don't have your own thoughts. I mean, given the chance, the chance of probabilities, if you stick around long enough with other people, you're probably going to come to the same decisions you'd make in uniform. And that's because you grew up in the system, which had to be sort of boxy. It had to have, you know, a lot of groupthink. That's the we part. Mm-hmm. But the me part is something that most of us are very uncomfortable with, you know, and the only way to be a successful person beyond the uniform is to learn to be me. And then, of course, you can get back into working in an environment where you're part of a team, but you're still a me within a team. And so, I never found a program like it. You know, I knew a lot of programs that help people get jobs, and that was okay. But without that foundation of figuring out who you are, chances are many people are just going to take the first job that comes through and says yes to them. And they may not, you know, assuming they have the finances, you know, so that they can make a choice. Of course, retirees do have a little bit of that flexibility, is, you know, to stop and think, is this right for me? Is this going to make me happy? And if it's not, then maybe waiting just a week or two for that next opportunity to come their way so that they can find the job that's going to make them happy and they can stick with it for a little bit longer.
I like your story, and I want to just reiterate, you and I are both on the same page. I wrote a 3-year transition guide for military professionals. So mm-hmm. having interviewed so many of you who didn't know what they wanted, I wanted them to get ahead of that. You know, and they all said to me, Cheryl, I wish I had more than a year. And then Chase Hughes, who wrote the introduction to my book, spent 20 years in the U.S. Navy, human intelligence. Now he's a wildly successful behavioral analyst. You can find him on YouTube. He said to me, I wish I could get to him at 3 years. And that's when it hit me. And I'm like, ooh, I'm going to write a book. But, you know, it can't happen soon enough. And it's challenging to think of something, you know, you're just starting your last PCS and you're trying to figure out how to leave it. You've got so much going on. But let me tell you, the stories I hear, you're drinking from the fire hose in a TAPS class, ETAPS too, even though you might be able to go twice or bring your spouse. It's a lot because it's everything. And as Darrell Williams, our mutual friend Darrell, said to me on this podcast, you know, I was coaching a person that had to get rotator cuff surgery, and his year went to 3 months very quickly because his rehab took up all his time. Mm. And so we're all trying to preach this, get ahead of it, get ahead of it, get ahead of it. But what Annie and the Leader Institute sounds like they're doing is they're condensing all of this and another drink from the fire hose, which you all do very well, by the way. She's teaching you to go from we to me. I love that. Because that's the one complaint I hear. And and Scott Heathman, also a guest on my podcast, who was a deputy commander at Scott Air Force Base, said, I would get in so much trouble if I stood on a stage and talked to everyone and started talking about myself. My commander would come down so hard on me because it's not about me.
Yeah.
And that really resonates as a civilian. So again, thank you so much. And I do believe you are continuing the mission, and you are continuing to work with people, not just on digital literacy for LinkedIn, but your radio show. And honestly, just your story and your joy. I love listening to your radio show. Not only do I love the music, but it's your joy. And I can hear that as a former broadcaster. So thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
How might someone reach out to you and reach? I know it's hard. I've been trying to get your attention for months. Would it be LinkedIn? And spell your last name for those who are not watching us. They're listening. Give us a little bit more a vector on how we could get a hold of you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, LinkedIn is a great place to start. I spend a lot of time on LinkedIn because I conduct training on it. And so I maintain, you know, a lot of time on there. And I write on a regular basis. Almost every day I'll write a post or engage in some meaningful way. So you can find me there quite easily. And yeah, I have an unusual name, so I'll spell it for you, which is V as in Victor, E-L-A-Z-Q-U-E-Z. And I think I'm one of the
Yes. You're a junior. That's how I find you.
And so once you find me, feel free to DM me and I will get back with you. Well, why don't you send me a follow and a connection request while you're at it? But but if you do that, then I'll go ahead and respond to you. And, you know, happy to help any service member in transition or military spouses who might have questions about how to support their service member or figure things out for themselves. Because, you know, obviously the transition happens for everyone in a family. So happy to help in any way that I can. And oh, by the way, service members who have already transitioned, who may be at that very first job thinking, oh, this is the worst. What do I do? How do I get out of here? What's the right move? And so I'm glad to not only connect with them, but also to help them get into that community of support that the Leader Transition Institute has. You know, it is 4 days. It is a 4 day class, but there is a long standing community of support that goes beyond that to help people. And I just there's so many veterans. You don't have to do it by yourself. And if you're doing it by yourself, well, gosh darn it, you're doing it wrong. So
that's
get
right.
it with it. The other way you can reach me is, or at least enjoy my music, is you can go to eagleonlineradio.com, and I am on the air from 7 to midnight East Coast time playing the greatest music of the 80s and 90s. And if you're a Gen Xer or you're a millennial who loves the music of that era, or even a Gen Z or Gen Alpha who's like trying to figure out, you know, what the old people listen to.
What their parents used to listen to. Exactly.
Absolutely. You know, the cool thing is TikTok is bringing some of that music back around. Of course, young people are rediscovering it. And it's so fun to hear them enjoying some of that music. So thank you, TikTok, for that one thing. I don't know. I'm still trying to learn the little dances, but I can't get it. Yeah, I couldn't dance in the 80s. I surely can't dance today. Again, I'm always sharing thoughts and experiences for the betterment of service members and veterans and military families. And so hopefully you get something from there.
We're going to have you back because it blows my mind that you've only been out 3 years. And what is it? 3 years and 1 month to this day?
3 years this exact month. So I'm celebrating my 3 year, you know, vetiversary, if it will. And so I'm so proud to be on this side of the uniform, but so thankful for the memories that I share with others on that side of the uniform. So it's been wonderful. And I just love being a veteran and, again, helping other veterans. So it's fun. And I'm having fun playing rock and roll and having fun just, you know, being me. I'm okay with that.
You're doing a good job. Keep it up, friend. Thank you so much. All right, we're going to close out this segment, and we're going to be moving into a segment where someone who's been out of the military at least 5 years to give us a different perspective. I'm Cheryl Cross. This is the Military to Civilian Career Transition Power Hour, and we'll be right back after this brief break. Coming up on the last segment of this hour, and I want to thank you so much for listening to the Military to Civilian Career Transition Power Hour. Each time that we meet people who are experts in their fields, folks who've been out 1 to 4 years, and those who have been out at least 5. Today, I'd like to introduce you to a 2-time retiree, a former Navy Reserve Commander and GS employee. He has quite a story to share with us. I'd like to introduce you to Mike Cantwell. Hi, Mike. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks for inviting me. Really appreciate it, and looking forward to talking to your listeners.
Well, thank you. And I know that your story is very unique. You've entered not only government contracting, but GS employment, and now you are an entrepreneur. So why don't you tell us the journey from 2015 to now and why you made some of the decisions you have in your career?
I spent some time in the intelligence community as a GS employee, had a variety of roles, put in my papers about a year ago and started the transition process. But I really wanted to be an entrepreneur. I've been wanting to start my own business or nonprofit for a long time now. So I just thought this was the right time to do it. My children were in college or out of college. My wife's a school teacher. So I wanted to go ahead and pursue my dream a little bit. So as I spoke to you earlier, I have about 3 things that I'm working on right now, but I really would like to share a few of them that I'm very passionate about and then talk about how I put my toe in the water in those while I was still on active duty and in the government, and how now I'm going to pursue those into businesses or nonprofit activity. Probably the first one is I became very engaged in the civic activities of my community. So probably 10, 15 years ago, you know, 3 small children still in the reserves, I signed on my first county board, a county commission, and got involved in some things and found out that I really liked it. I became the president of my local civic association, and I'd be out pulling weeds in front of my house, and I'd have some neighbor stop by and say, "Hey, Mike, you know, what are you going to do about this traffic problem or other issues going on to the community?" So I really like learning about problems and then solving those problems. And that really led me to joining other civic commissions and activities. And then in 2021, I actually decided to run for political office. So I live in Arlington, Virginia. So I ran for the Arlington County Board. Arlington, Virginia, if people don't know it, it's only 24 square miles, but there's 240,000 people that live in Arlington, Virginia. So I went through the whole process of running for office. I am a very strong independent, like many veterans are. So it was very important to me to not run as a Republican or a Democrat, but to run as an independent. So I gathered the signatures, did all the things you need to do to run for political office, had a campaign, had a website, very active on social media, and raised a little bit of money. I didn't win, but I did receive a pretty good number of votes. I received over 11,000 votes. After talking to several other people in the political reform space and the independence movement, I decided to launch Independence for America. And Independence for America is all about helping local and state candidates that are independent run for office. So I'm not going to provide consulting services to anyone that is going to run as a Republican or a Democrat. And I'm also not going to help anybody that's running like for president or U.S. Senator. I'm really going to stick to local office because that's where I think the most opportunity for change is.
What was the learning curve for you? Were you learning as you go, or were you consulting with somebody when you ran for your board seat or your commission?
Well, that's a really great question. I did read a book. There is a book that's a paperback book about if you're running for local office, which was somewhat helpful. But I had several people who had been candidates before. There was one person who ran as an independent in Arlington several years ago and actually won. So very unusual for someone to run, to win in Arlington that isn't a Democrat. We're very deep blue here in Arlington, Virginia. But he was a little bit my role model, and he would send me texts and phone calls and, you know, give me advice and things like that. So, and then just being open to people giving you advice. My wife was very helpful because she softened my campaign message a little bit, which was very helpful. And then I was pretty good at, you know, this is very entrepreneurial too, is you need to make rapid changes, right? So if you're going one direction with a policy issue or a campaign theme, and it's just not working, or maybe it's being counterproductive, you need to pivot really quickly. You don't want to go down the wrong path for a while. Some just tried and true things, like don't have 30 different bullet points on your web page of issues that you care about. You got to keep it to like 3 to 5. And then just really listen to people and really understand what the community wants, but then also understand your lane. Just like any other business, you have to understand you're not going to compete on in one lane. You need to go to another one where you think you can pick up some votes.
I think a lot of people are moving to the middle. They're trying to find that nice place. Here in Hawaii, we have Tulsi Gabbard. She's a very well-known independent.
There's only a few other major cities that have truly independent mayors. So Honolulu's one, Colorado Springs, Colorado is another one. There's a few other ones around the country too.
It's hard to stay center. I've been told throughout my civic career, you don't win in the middle. You have to pick a side and you got to fight like hell. Like you said, pick 4 or 5 topics and grind them down. And that is your mark. It sounds like that tide is changing. Is it?
Not only do I feel it, but I see it. I just was on a conference call with a retired naval officer who moved to Greene County, Virginia, which is in the middle of nowhere. And he's lived there for about 3 years, but he has such a sense of service that he decided to run for Greene County Board of Supervisors. And I followed his campaign from afar. And then I had a virtual meeting with him, and it's wonderful. He's doing it all for the right reasons. He won his race against an endorsed Republican candidate in a very rural part of Virginia. So he's an example of people running, winning, and serving. And then on my Substack site called Independence for America, I have several podcasts, local and state candidates who have run and won. And probably my biggest exemplar is a woman named Laura Sebilia in Vermont. She's been reelected about 4 times for the Vermont State House. And she gets called on by the Republican governor to be the referee between the Democrats and the Republican because she's an independent. She really is attuned to her local constituents, and it's all about serving her local constituents. So she doesn't have to worry about party politics or anything like that.
I remember when independents were called the Tea Party, and the Tea Party was being really admonished for their wild beliefs. And even then I thought, well, if I could just sit in the middle of this fight, if I could just sit in the middle and call myself whatever, a centrist. Seems that in the nomenclature, in our vocabulary, that independent is being more well received and not as admonished. A lot of people are coming to the middle because they're sick of the right and the left. Am I right?
So Pew Research has been tracking party affiliation for over 60 years now. And we now reach the point that 49% of Americans self-identify as independents. So it's only about 25 each for the Republicans or Democrats, but it's 49% independents. With veterans and active duty, it's even higher than that. People think that all or most veterans are Republican, and that's just not true. We have a very strong feeling of being nonpartisan and also solving problems. So that's another group of people I really want to reach out to encourage them to run for office. And that is military veterans. So especially running as an independent.
As a councilwoman for the state of Hawaii, I serve on the Workforce Development Council, and then a former commissioner in California for Hermosa Beach Emergency Preparedness. I can say that civic duty, even when you're having your worst days, showing up to those council chambers or showing up to those meetings and meeting with your colleagues who are doing the same thing It's really, it's invigorating. Many of you who are listening, I'm sure, especially those folks who are coming out in leadership roles and are maybe looking for work in the workplace, you may want to consider how might you contribute back to your community, wherever that is. If you're moving to your home of record, if you're staying in your last PCS duty station, wherever that is, wherever you can really, I think, grow roots in a way. My mother used to say, you have to grow roots before you gain trust. Serving in a different way, in one of the things, Mike, I hear from people when I interview them for this podcast is they've lost their sense of purpose. How might running for office, which is a challenge, how might serving really show that sense of purpose?
So many have used the phrase when they talk about reservists, I'll just say that, is that you're twice the citizen. I actually think that if you serve in the military for 20 years and then you retire and then you decide to run for office and serve in a local office, you're also twice the citizen to do that. I really think that getting involved in civic activities and then ultimately running for office is there's no higher calling in my point of view, especially if you've already served in the military. So run for office, win, and I hope I can help people win, and then serve honorably. A lot of politicians, there are a lot of not so good politicians, but the vast majority of them are doing it for the right reason. They're just stuck in a system that is not working very well right now. A lot of my other activities revolve around the political reform community. So we are trying to implement common sense reforms like nonpartisan primaries and ranked choice voting, because many of us believe that those very minor reforms will help our political discourse and hopefully get us back to problem solving rather than just demonizing the other side.
Good luck. Let's talk about your journey from active duty to reserve while you're GS. You mentioned something I want you to talk about, how you worked on what you call the third shift. Where does the third shift come from?
One, a great leader in the entrepreneurial world and also in the political reform world is a guy named Todd Connor. So he's a former naval officer, former surface warfare officer, started this organization called Bunker Labs, which is about veterans who want to start their own businesses, a very successful kind of startup type organization. And now he's the CEO of Veterans for All Voters. But he wrote a book very recently within the last 2 years called The Third Shift. And it's really is a very approachable format because he tells a lot of stories in this book about people who had their day job, but they really wanted to do something else. But they realized they couldn't give up their day job fully until they learned a little bit about this new world or starting a new business. So some of the stories he told was about a woman who really wanted to start a high-end import-export coffee company. But she realized that she needed to learn more about the coffee industry and learn more about just coffee shops. And so she worked her regular 9-to-5 job, and then she'd run right over to her local mom and pop barista and learned all about the coffee beans and how they were grown and where they came from. And then just the ins and outs and the challenges of starting a coffee shop. And a lot of people said, oh, so you're going to start a coffee shop. And she said, no, I'm going to start an import-export business. But I need to learn what the user end of, you know, the ultimate end user of coffee beans are consumers. Another one was a story of a guy who was really into fine art. So he really wanted to start his own art gallery, but he couldn't give up his day job. But he was able to partner with his current job to sponsor the art galleries. I guess I'll give a little bit of advice for that is that you are fortunate if you're in the military, let's say that you're 20 years in or 25 or something like that, that if you are at a duty station where your hours are relatively normal and you have a little bit of time to explore these other opportunities, to do it then. And you're going to have to work hard, right? You might have to do this on the weekends or in the evenings. But if it's really what you want to do and you really have this passion for it, it's so much better to do it while you have regular income than to suddenly drop off and, you know, go head first into, let's say, starting a coffee shop, right? By doing this third shift, this side hustle is another way to say this, your chances of success are much greater than if you go all in as soon as you retire or leave the military.
I've had quite a few guests that are doing that right now. Jay Salters of Act Now Education, he doesn't get out until 2027. He has a very lofty goal of getting 1,000 people tech jobs before he retires, and he's doing it. He's doing it very well. That is his side hustle. And all the folks that are working with ACT Now Education are volunteers, by the way. I asked him, how do you do that? He says, well, I have that. I have my full-time officer job with the Navy. And then I have a for-profit business. It's like, do you sleep? I mean, my goodness. So how would you recommend? You've certainly had multiple streams. You were active duty, then reservist, a GS employee, a government contractor. I mean, you've done a lot. Well, since you got out of the Navy and then went reserves and then retired as a commander from the reserves. So you've had a very interesting career to me, one that shows a lot of stability, right? And for those of us who've worked in government contracting and then they go to GS, it's like, okay, well, you're set for life. And I think that's the belief, you know, you're going to go into government contracting and then you're going to go and get that GS job. That GS job is what we're all waiting for. Talk to me a little bit about that and what made you decide to go GS.
Yeah, it was probably a little bit of that. You know, not every job is your most ideal job. And I did move around a lot. You know, a lot of it is dependent on a boss or a client. And sometimes they work out well and sometimes they don't. So when I was working for government contracting jobs, I did keep my eye open for GS jobs. And I had some good years as a government employee. But then towards the end, I'm just like, you don't leave a job, you leave a boss, you know, it's just not working out too well. And I'm just like, it's, you know, time is now to do something else. You want to have a purpose. And so you have to find your place, you have to find your niche. And the beautiful thing about America is if it ain't working, then go do something else. So fortunately, in the agency I was in, they have a very good kind of career mobility, whereas other government agencies, you need to wait for somebody to die just about, right? So it's really helpful to be in a government agency where you do have the opportunity to move around a lot and you can change jobs if you have a difficult situation or something like that. So that would be something I would recommend people try to find situations where you have mobility. But as you said earlier, it's all about purpose. And hopefully you'll be able to find a job that you can have that sense of purpose. But then if you don't, you might want to go find it yourself. And you could do it through a nonprofit. You can do it through charitable activities. I'm encouraging people to get involved in civic organizations and then ultimately run for office. So the great thing about veterans is they usually want to serve. And mm-hmm. I really do encourage them to find what the best fit is for them.
I have very few people talking about GS roles on the show, and it makes me realize that I need to go find some more. So Mike, send me your friends. I don't want to leave it out that you are willing to mentor and that you are willing to be contacted. So how might the folks that are listening and can't see how your name is spelled, how might they find you? Is it through LinkedIn?
I'm very active on LinkedIn. So just Mike Cantwell, that's C-A-N-T-W-E-L. And then I also have a LinkedIn profile under Cantwell Consulting. So you can look under that. And then you can also look in LinkedIn Independence for America. So Independence for America is spelled with a T-S at the end instead of a C-E. So independence, like the people rather than the concept. And then I have a Substack that's called Independence for America Substack. And I have three podcasts on there where you can hear from some of these amazing independent candidates who have run for office and are now serving. I do have some veterans who will be on my podcast in the future. You know, we all serve in different ways, right? So I have two women who has more than one child who are serving in the military. So, you know, there are a lot of mothers out there who have service members who are serving in the armed forces. So everybody has a chance to serve in one way or another. And I really encourage people to reach out to me and I'll give you some help and advice.
So if you are a listener and you are former military or not, maybe you're a family member and you are military affiliated, maybe you've been in the workforce for a long time and you're looking to pivot, call Mike. I mean, it's a free phone call, right, Mike?
Absolutely.
You don't charge for your first phone call, right?
And I'm going to make one more plug, not for me, but for another situation that we have. We need more mm-hmm. poll workers out there. We have many people from a certain generation who have basically retired from being poll workers. And it's a long day, which, you know, this is perfect for military members and veterans. A, they know how to follow procedures, right? So there's a lot of procedures involved in running a polling location, but they usually need to work from about 6 a.m. to about 8 o'clock at night. So it is a long day, but they really need you. So please go to your local election office and raise your right hand and say, I'm willing to serve again as a poll.
Thank you so much. That was Mike Cantwell. He is our 5+ year veteran. He is full of information. Do reach out to him on LinkedIn. And if you are thinking of running for office, definitely reach out to him. Independence, as in the people for America, .org. All right. Well, we're doing lots of good here. We're going to wrap up this segment and say thank you so much for listening. I'm Cheryl Cross, your host, and you're listening to the Military to Civilian Career Transition Power Hour. We'll be right back after this brief break.